I think the songs that we have sung set the tone for what I want to talk about today. But before I actually start, I want to suggest to those of you that are here this morning who are not Christians that there's one thing that I want you to think about all through the lesson, and that is that there is absolutely nothing that is more important than you being obedient to the gospel of Christ. And again, I think these songs that we have sung make that point to us. And I'm going to make it again before this lesson is over. There is absolutely nothing that is more important. I guess I'm fortunate in some ways in that when I get to speak to you, it's just every so often, and there's a lot of time in between to think about what I ought to preach about the next time I get up. It's a little bit different than trying to prepare two sermons a week, every week, week after week. I've tried that before too, and that sometimes gets to be a challenge as far as trying to find the lessons that'll do the most good. But sitting in classes here at Noblewood and talking to different ones of you in homes and discussions and so forth, there have been a lot of issues raised and discussions argued. And in some of these cases, we found very few concrete answers upon which we agreed. And that has sort of troubled me. We've talked about gray areas and areas where there's a lot of variability as to how we could respond to situations that arose. And I kind of wondered about that. We've discussed modesty, and we've asked the question, how different must the Christian be? What's too short? What's not correct for the Christian to wear? What is immodest? We've discussed husband and wife relationships, and we've discussed for hour upon end just how much must a wife or a husband take before they say that's enough and they dissolve the marriage. I don't think we've agreed on that. We've discussed honesty in classes. Is it all right to be silent when wrong things are being done and you're a Christian? We haven't answered that question real well. We've discussed giving in one of the classes in the back this quarter. We raised the question, how much do I have to give to the Lord? I told the class I couldn't tell them. And I can. And people ask, how much do I have to give? And I said, I don't know what to tell you. We've discussed work. How do I meet my financial objectives in this life and still be a Christian? And we don't agree on the answers. We've discussed death. And the question has been raised, how can it be God's will when my husband or my wife or my child is taken away? There are some of you in the audience this morning who are not Christians, and you have sat here for years listening to the gospel. And we haven't always answered the question to you very well, since there are people in this congregation who don't live right themselves, why you ought to be a member of the body of Christ. Granted, none of these questions are easily answered in practice, but I suspect that they are made more difficult because we haven't followed the admonition that we're going to find in our text this morning. If you would, please, turn with me to Matthew, the 10th chapter, verses 34 through 39. This is Jesus speaking. He said, "Think not that I am come to send peace on earth. I came not to send peace, but a sword. For I am come to set a man at variance with his father, and the daughter against her mother, and the daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law. And a man's foes shall be they of his own household. He that loveth father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. And he that loveth son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. And he that taketh not his cross and followeth after me is not worthy of me. He that findeth his life shall lose it, and he that loseth his life for my sake shall find it. Let me go back to verse 38 a moment, and that's going to be the centerpiece of my lesson. And he that taketh not his cross and followeth after me is not worthy of me. I'm going to be talking this morning about taking up our own crosses and bearing them in this life. And I think some of the discussion that the Bible has and some things that we can draw from that may help us to a little bit more readily answer some of these questions that we call gray areas and which we have difficulty with. Jesus suggests in this text that his way is not easy. He said he didn't come to send peace into this world, but a sword. And he goes on to explain what he's talking about, and he says that sometimes following after him is going to cut right into the family, right into our friends. We're going to see husbands and wives torn asunder by following Jesus, and we're going to see families torn asunder, and we're going to find all of our close ties in this world sometimes severed. It's not always going to be a peaceful circumstance. But you know, I think most of us are exceedingly driven by wanting a Christianity, a religious belief in which we can live at peace among all men that we're with. And that is a mistake. It's probably one of the biggest mistakes that we're making in the world today, in the church today, is that we're looking for a gospel at which we can be at peace with other men and women of this world. Even sometimes we take it for granted that we're not going to be at peace with the outside world, but we think that the gospel of Christ is going to mean that we're going to at least be at peace within the home and among those that we're most closely associated with. And that is not necessarily so. Jesus said in this passage in Matthew 10, that there is going to be conflict, and that it is going to be close to home, and that the choices that sometimes we're going to have to make to follow after him are going to split some of our closest ties. He says we must take up our cross and follow him. Take up a cross that belongs to us and follow after him. Just like with some of you, that passage hits me brutally hard because it suggests to me that there are things that I am not doing that I ought to be doing. I looked a little closer at this idea of bearing a cross. And so many times that is just passed over. We've preached so many sermons about the cross of Christ and sung the songs that we sung this morning so many times in the past that sometimes the meaning begins to fade. But the concept of cross-bearing was a figure of the day in which Jesus lived, and it stood for doing a thing that was disagreeable to do or bearing a thing that was painful to bear because it was right. Let me repeat that. Cross-bearing was a concept that stood for doing something that was disagreeable to do or bearing a thing that was painful to bear because it was right. Jesus repeated this idea a few chapters later in Matthew the 16th chapter and verses 24 through 26. Then said Jesus unto his disciples, if any man will come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. For whosoever will save his life shall lose it, and whosoever will lose his life for my sake shall find it. For what is a man profited if he shall gain the whole world and lose his own soul? Or what shall a man give in exchange for his soul? I'm talking once again to those of you that are not Christians who are here this morning. Think about that question. I don't care what question is in your mind, what reason that you have for not obeying the gospel of Christ, just answer that question before you leave here today. If you can come up with any answer to that question that is satisfying to you, fine. But I don't think you can. If you gain whatever you've got in mind in this world, you have the loveliest wife, the loveliest family, the greatest home, the greatest job, you have power and prestige and everything there is in this world, and the judgment day comes and God says, "Depart from me, ye that work iniquity, into eternal hell," what is it worth? Jesus suggested to us that if we want to follow him, we need to deny ourselves. And that suggests that some of these things that I just mentioned, we have to deny ourselves. That is, not allow ourselves to have, even if in and of themselves at times they be right. If that means that to have those things, we can't follow him and do his will, then even those things that are right in and of themselves, sometimes we have to deny to ourselves. He suggests that we need to follow after him. And I would suggest to you that some of those questions that I put forth in the beginning of the lesson, some of those things that we don't understand very well or don't know how to put into practical application, that if we begin to follow Jesus and, in essence, put ourselves in his shoes when those questions arise and try to determine what we would do if we were him, you know, they become a lot clearer. We were talking about gambling back in the class this morning. We were having a real tough time identifying what gambling was and the fine line between the normal risk of life and what is actually gambling and what the Bible says about gambling. We'll just take any one of those situations that we were talking about and put Jesus right there in the middle of the situation, and then you tell me what he'd do. Jesus buying raffle tickets? Jesus in Las Vegas gambling? Jesus doing this? Jesus doing that? Put yourself in his shoes. Follow him. You walk into that situation, act like he's walking right in front of you, and you're going to do what he does. Simple enough. You know, our kids do that, sometimes to our despair. They follow right after us, and whatever we do, they do, good or bad. Well, Jesus said, follow him. We walk into a situation, pretend like he's standing right there in front of you, and whatever he does, you do. You'd be amazed how many of these gray areas become as though a big light is shining down upon them. I forget that a lot, and I think a lot of us do. Jesus is suggesting here in Matthew 16 that we have to have a total commitment to service to the Father. You know, this whole concept that I'm talking about is something that is perfectly embodied in the life of Jesus. You think about it a minute. We're always thinking about ourselves and our situation and how all the problems we're faced with and who we are and how important we are and all of that sort of thing. But let's look at Jesus for a moment this morning. Jesus was and is God. He resided in heaven, not here on the earth. He held all power. He needed to work his way up any corporate ladder. He was at the top. You know, sometimes we look at ourselves and we begin to get a inflated idea of who we are, and we begin to let these discussions about following Jesus kind of run off the side because we begin to think we're important people. We have the big home. We have the positions of power. We have nothing compared to what Jesus had in heaven. And yet Jesus lowered himself even below the angels and became a man and a servant to serve our needs. He was born in a barn, in a manger where the food for the animals was kept for them to eat. He was poor. He had no place to call home after he departed from his parents. He said he had no place to even lay his head most of the time. He just traveled from place to place. He was rejected by his friends, some members of those very closest to him. Members of his own country rejected him. He accepted without saying hardly a word, people telling enormous lies about him. They spit on him. They beat him. They called him names. They did everything you can imagine to humiliate the man. And yet he was God. You know, we begin to think sometimes that I just don't have to take that. Being a Christian doesn't mean that I have to take this kind of abuse from anybody. But we're not thinking about Jesus very clearly when we talk like that, either out loud or to ourselves. Jesus didn't have to take any of that. In a sense that we can't even imagine he didn't have to take it. Even when Jesus was on the cross, he didn't have to take it. He could have called legions of angels down to have taken him off that cross at any moment. He didn't have to take it. But he did. The cross has become the very symbol of what Jesus endured. And when I talk about this morning, the fact that he teaches in Matthew 10 and chapter 16 as well that we need to take up our crosses, we need to look at the symbolism that's involved in what Jesus did. We look sometimes at the torture that was involved in the cross and the blood that was shed in the cross, but sometimes we don't look at the fact that Jesus endured all of that when he didn't have to. He did it voluntarily. Jesus said we are to take up our crosses and follow him. Over in Mark, it puts the word daily in there. We're to take up our crosses daily and follow him. I want you to, for a moment, use your imagination. I want you to imagine you were back there 2,000 years ago, and you're with Jesus, and he is literally carrying that big cross up to Golgotha, dragging it up there. It's heavy. Now put yourself in his shoes. I don't want to say anything that is not right in terms of our substituting ourselves for Jesus, but I want you to imagine for a few moments that you are Jesus and you are about to be executed by the most heinous means that the Roman government had in store for its worst criminals. You know that in a matter of moments or hours, two guards are going to grab you and stretch you out on that cross. And one man is going to pick up a big sledgehammer and a steel or wooden spike, and he's going to drive that through the palms of your hands and through your feet. And then they're going to lift that cross up and drop it in a hole, and you're going to hang there bleeding and dying a little bit at a time by loss of blood, dehydration, and swelling of the body. What would be going through your mind if that were you? I thought about that the other night when I was working on this lesson. I think the first thing that would come to my mind is, isn't there another way? I know that's what was going through Jesus' mind because the Bible tells us that's what he was going through. In the Garden of Gethsemane, before they came to get him even, he knew what was lying ahead. And his prayer to the Father indicated that if there was any other way, that he said, not my will, but thine be done. You imagine that if to be loyal to the Father in heaven, you were about to face the electric chair today. 18,000 volts of electricity to be passed through your head and your feet. If you were to remain loyal to the Lord, what would be going through your mind? I think I would be thinking, isn't there another way? Isn't there some way out of this? Can I do something else to get out of this? Jesus was man enough while he was here on the earth to have every feeling like you and I have about the kind of agony that was awaiting him. What else would you think about? I'd think about, what about my wife? What about my four sons? If they execute me, what about them? Well, Jesus didn't have a wife or four sons, but He was hanging there on the cross and gave directions for the care of his mother. Jesus thought about that sort of thing. He still went to the cross. And you know, something else I think I would be thinking about as all that was going on is this really going to make any difference? When I'm dead and they finally take my body away and bury it, is it going to make any difference or not? If I was hanging on that cross, or even today, the way most people reject the gospel of Christ, if I was going to be electrocuted or hung or whatever it was, I'd have to be thinking, is this going to make any difference? Jesus is hanging there on the cross, and people all down below him were railing accusations against him and making fun of him and carrying on. Can't you imagine what was going through his mind from a temporal standpoint? Most of these people aren't going to take advantage of what I'm dying for. You know, at any one of those points, it would just be superbly easy to rationalize and change your mind. But Jesus still says to follow him. In every difficult question of life, we step into his shoes and we answer our questions as he would have answered them. Because we've never been in a situation like Jesus was in our lives. I don't believe that there's a person here, even some of you that have been in the middle of combat, in war, I don't think you've been in a situation quite like Jesus was in. Because you're still here. Jesus put aside the natural feelings of the outward man to achieve what he achieved. He viewed doing the Father's will as more important than anything else. And again, we go back to Matthew 16 and we look at what the question that he asked. If you gain the whole world, and the devil offered it to him, and lose your own soul, what have you profited? Jesus saw beyond this life and even death, and saw what lay out there beyond in heaven, and the importance of that, and the triviality of really what we consider important in comparison to all that. Again, I ask you to imagine yourself on that cross that Jesus was on, and the questions that undoubtedly went through his mind. One of the things that I think is important about bearing our crosses daily is that we have to take up these crosses voluntarily. I don't think that Jesus was talking about the sickness that we endure and the pain, the everyday reversals of life that we encounter when he talked about taking up our crosses. Everybody encounters that sort of thing, whether they're righteous or unrighteous, whether they're a Christian or not a Christian. The sort of thing that Jesus was talking about was something that we voluntarily step out here and do, and then we bring trouble upon ourselves by doing that which was right. Voluntary. It's not something that people just lay on us because we didn't do anything. It's because our actions precipitate these things. Jesus, if you'll remember, acted in such a fashion that he brought about his own crucifixion. Now, other men crucified him, but Jesus' actions were instrumental in bringing about that crucifixion. He did not deserve the crucifixion, do not misunderstand me, but his righteous behavior instigated the crucifixion and the cross. Look at all the points where Jesus could have halted his crucifixion. What about his teaching? If it had just modified his teaching, if it had just thought the easiest way, the most peaceful way, will be to present it in this sort of soft fashion so that I don't offend these people, Jesus wouldn't have been crucified. You can preach a gospel as we hear preached on television today, and nobody's going to crucify you. Not physically or even in a literal way. Jesus could have prevented his crucifixion by where he went and when. Now, early in his ministry, Jesus would occasionally get in a boat and escape from the crowd that was getting angry. Or he would slip through the back of a crowd and out because he said, "My time has not yet come." But when the time of his crucifixion drew near, Jesus walked to Jerusalem, not away from it. Jesus could have prevented his crucifixion by the way he answered his accusers. In most cases, Jesus did not answer his accusers. They told lies about him. They brought in paid liars to tell stories about him. And he just stood there silently and took it. Jesus could have turned the tables at even his mock trial if he'd wanted to. And as we mentioned before, even as he hung on the cross, the nails in his hands and his feet, he could have called down legions of angels to have taken him out and obliterated everyone that had accused him at that very hour. He had that power. But really, I'm raising the point of Jesus in this case to make a point about us and our crosses. Do we take up our crosses voluntarily? How do we teach? Do we teach in such a fashion that we don't get crucified? Or do we teach in such a fashion that we know we're going to bring problems upon ourselves? When we decide where and when we go someplace, what's on our minds? Trying to escape the ridicule and the problems and the accusations? Or do we have foremost the Father's will and we just accept those things that come? I find myself in all too many circumstances trying to find the road of least resistance, the area that brings me the least problems as a Christian. And I think some of our discussions here in various classes suggest that most of us are doing that. When people accuse us, how do we respond? Do we try to make ourselves just look like the average person who wears the name Christian to make ourselves look normal? Or do we stand up for what the Lord has said? 1 Timothy 3 and verse 12, Paul told that young preacher, "Yea, and all who will live godly in Christ Jesus shall suffer persecution." We look at that one way, and it tells us one thing, but when we look at it a little bit more closely, yes, and all who will live godly shall suffer persecution. If you don't suffer any persecution, are you living godly? The question gets much deeper when looked at in that light. If we are looking for the easiest way to be a Christian, I think we're missing the point of the cross. Jesus and the Father himself did not look for the easiest way to save our souls. Matter of fact, I think they must have picked the hardest route. You know, there was a Roman soldier who came to Jesus and he wanted a relative cured of a disease. And that soldier said, "I'm in command of a large number of men." He said, "I tell those soldiers, do this, and they do it." And he looked to the Lord and he said, "All you have to do is give the command, and my child will be well." You know, the God of heaven could have, in forgiving our sins, perhaps just given the executive order, "It is forgiven." But that probably would not have changed the hearts and minds of men like the cross has done when it has changed people's hearts. Jesus suffered excruciatingly to help other people. And you know, what motivates us, what brings tears to our eyes, what moves us to live righteously is to look back at that cross and see what the Son of God went through for me and for you. That's what motivates us. And I want to suggest to you this morning that we've got to quit thinking about doing things the easy way, because the same thing about Jesus' death that moves us is what has to be shown in our lives to move other people. And when people see us just taking the easy way, that doesn't motivate anybody. But when we suffer persecution, when we bear our cross, that is, we suffer persecution for doing that which is right, and we do it without complaint, and we just keep doing it because it's right, and it hurts our family, and it hurts us, and it hurts our economic situation, it hurts our prestige in the community, but we just keep plodding along, doing what is right, people see that, and that moves people, just like the cross that Jesus bore moved us. The paradox of Christianity is contained in the text that we read this morning. If we find great comfort in this life, the ease of this life, then we lose the next one. And if we suffer for others here in this life, and this life is made miserable for us because we're doing right, then the reward is found in the next life. That's the paradox of Christianity. And I come back to those of you that are here this morning who are not Christians. Whatever reason that you're putting forward in your mind for not obeying the Lord, does it not come back, in essence, to the fact that you're trying to find the easiest route? Or that you're arriving at reasons or excuses or whatever you want to call them, just like Jesus could have rationalized when he was on the cross. Only Jesus' reasons would have been a whole lot better than yours are. There are basically two choices before all of us today. If you're not a Christian, you have the two choices. Those of us who are Christians still have the choice. We can follow Jesus. We can do what he did. We can deny ourselves. We can help other people. We can show love. And sometimes showing love means that we get hurt for the benefit of someone else. And you know, we're all moved. They make movies about this. The fellow that jumps on the hand grenade to save the life of his buddies in combat, and the tears roll down our faces because that man loved those other men enough that he let himself be blown to pieces to save their lives. We come to tears when we hear stories about a mother or a father who jumps in front of a train, throws their child out of the way, and then they're killed, saving that child's life, because they put themselves as less important than their children. We're moved by that sort of thing. It's love manifested. Jesus loved us enough, and when he says follow him, it's not as though we're just walking behind him. He's suggesting that we behave like he would behave. And when we encounter situations in this life, we ask ourselves, how would he do it? We look at the Bible and find out how he did it, and then we copy that. But the second choice is one that, when we look at the cross of Christ, is repugnant to us. There was another group of people there on that day that stood there and yelled, "Crucify him! Crucify him!" And they watched with glee as the executioners drove those spikes into his hand, and later jabbed the spear into his side. And they sat there and laughed and ridiculed and suggested that if he were the Son of God, he'd bring himself down off that cross. I want to suggest to you this morning that if we don't follow Jesus, then we automatically put ourselves in the second category, and we might as well be the men who picked up the spike and drove it in the Son of God. The choice is really that simple. It's brutal. It's not a pleasant picture. But when we make all the excuses and we look for the way of ease, then we put ourselves in that category with those group of men who yelled, "Crucify him." If you want to serve the Lord this morning, the invitation is to you to follow him while we stand and sing.